Welcome to Three Identical Strangers, the science behind the story. I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. In this podcast, we explore the scientific, social, and historical themes that emerge from the award-winning CNN film, Three Identical Strangers. Today's episode is really special. I'm going to be joined by director Tim Wardle and producer Becky Reed, who will take us inside the filmmaking process of Three Identical Strangers. Now, quickly, spoiler alert for everyone, we are going to be discussing the film, so if you haven't seen it yet and don't want it ruined, you've been warned. Tim and Becky, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sanjay. Nice to be here.
It's an amazing film, and congratulations. It's really terrific. What I loved about it was that it got into so many subjects, many of which we've dived into in this podcast, but nature-nurture, bioethics, the special relationship that multiple share, and so much more than that. If you had to distill it down, Tim, to just a couple of sentences, how do you describe it?
I see this film as a family drama about these three brothers separated at birth and reunited at the age of 19 that allows you to explore these much bigger themes of nature versus nurture, free will, destiny, family. It's kind of all of those things. And I always wanted to keep it open, you know, to encompass as much thematic material as possible rather than try and narrow it down. So I see it as about all those things and more.
You said, I think, somewhere that when you heard the story, it was the single best documentary story idea you'd come across. What was it? When you heard the original story, what really struck you?
I think that the fact that the story works on a kind of instant human level, it's a great human interest story. It's quite tabloid even. But that it allows you to explore these much bigger themes, and that it has layers, you know, and that's what you're looking for as a director, I think, something with depth that isn't just surface. And, you know, there are a lot of great stories out there that are just that. They're just great stories, but they don't kind of go anywhere or allow you right. to explore anything beyond the surface. So this has those levels, and that makes it a standout in documentary world for me.
I want to bring you in a second, Becky, and ask you about how complicated this was. But I just have to ask you, Tim, because I really I was struck by sort of midpoint through the movie. There was such a shift, right? We suddenly reveal some of what was really going on here in terms of the fact that they were actually separated, these brothers. There's almost, it goes from being really inspiring, a reunification story, to something darker. Did you sort of plan that? Did that just become apparent as you were making the film? How did you navigate that?
I think I always knew that there was going to be quite a tonal shift in the film. You know, as you say, it starts off very joyous, this family reunion, and takes a dark turn into more of a kind of, almost like an identity thriller or something like that. And that was conscious. I mean, the one big decision I made at the start of making the film was to see everything from the brothers' perspective. So most of the information in the film is revealed to the audience at the same time it was revealed to the brothers. So we're really in their shoes. So the idea is that when these twists and turns and additional information are kind of brought in, we're seeing them pretty much at the same time the brothers were experiencing them. So we're kind of hopefully empathizing with them even more.
Yeah, it was just really well done. Again, as a viewer, you know, that sort of past tense, present tense, and then that interweaving of those tenses and that time period, I thought was really just really well done. Becky, I mean, how much did you know about this story in terms of where it was going to go when you started?
I'd say we knew about two-thirds of this. I mean, the brothers' story was sort of documented by Larry Wright in some form in his piece. And, you know, we certainly did a huge amount of research into their story early on. But in regards to the study and getting access to that, that was a huge unknown for us. You know, we had many conversations at the beginning about even whether we would get access and how long that would take. we didn't know, I guess, sort of some of the ins and outs of the brothers, the family story, I guess, and the kind of the sensitivities around some of the restaurants and the boys' relationship and Eddie and his family. So, yeah, two-thirds of it, really. And we sort of were very kind of careful about scripting almost, you know, exactly what we wanted to go out and shoot. We had to be, you know, budget-wise, you're limited in how much you can film. But then also, you know, you come back from any interview shoot with a huge amount more material than you ever imagined. So things come out in interviews that you had no idea about as people sit down in the storytelling process and go back to that time and remember things that they hadn't remembered during the research. So,
was there a sense of outrage for you?
Yeah, I think the sense of injustice, really, that this had happened to the boys and that people had refused to talk about it and tried to cover it up. And I think as a producer, that, you know, the emotional kind of drive of that really helped, and certainly sort of helps you when you're sitting in the office late at night, you know, making phone calls and hitting dead ends and sitting in archives and trying to unearth information. So definitely that sense of injustice that somebody had orchestrated this and made decisions about these families, you know, and then lied to them during the research that was done.
Yeah, really, it really came across. You know, I think family dynamics, doing films that involve significant family dynamics can always be complicated. Sometimes you don't know what you're getting yourself into. But with something like this, there was obviously incredibly complicated relationships between the brothers, between the families. How did you get them to be able to open up in this way?
It's a very long, slow process. And, you know, that was a work in progress for the whole making of the film. I mean, Tim had met them many years before, and that, I think, had also helped.
Sanjay, I would say, you know, I mean, it was about 4 years in development in total, and most of that time was spent trying to earn the trust of the brothers and their families. And that continued through into the year of production as well. So it was a really long-term kind of trust-building exercise. And, I mean, I think the other thing to add is that although there was information about this story that was out there, no one had really ever committed the brothers' story to film or to, I mean, there wasn't a book of their story either. So there was a really long process of kind of piecing together this narrative, the brothers' story, from sources that weren't online, you know, or this exists in a pre-internet kind of era. So we were really, you know, there's three families, the story stretches over 60 years, you know, there are all these people, these scientists who won't talk to us. And so it was quite meticulous. And, you know, Becky was doing quite kind of almost like old school investigative journalism, knocking on people's doors, spending a lot of time in archives in New York. We really did have to piece it together.
And you get the sense as you're watching the film that things are, you know, being learned and unspooled even as the film goes on. What the boys, the brothers, have been able to track down about themselves and the study that they unwittingly participated in, there was things learned along the way. Can you share some of what they've learned through this whole process?
We had no idea that Becky was going to find the assistant to Peter Neubauer, the main scientist, Natasha, tracked her down. I don't think she'd ever spoken on camera before, and gave us real insight into the mindset and what was going on back then. And then, you know, also, I think our discovery that it was probably primarily focused on parenting, the study. I think that was quite a big revelation, and then all the stuff that's come out since with Becky getting the brothers access to their study notes, you know, which is kind of 11,000 pages, and the videos, which have never been seen before in you know, 58 years or however long.
Yeah, you weren't scripting a drama here; you were making a documentary. I think it's such an important point. You know, one of the scenes that really got to me, and I just wonder how it affected you. When this researcher is then somewhat, you know, sort of discloses that he in fact had been going to the various brothers' homes and not disclosing to the families, to the brother, that he'd just seen, you know, one of his triplets, and they were living not that far apart, and this researcher was actually going home to home doing the study, but not disclosing that point. It was almost haunting to me. It gave me a pit in my stomach when I watched that, rewound and watched it again, just to watch his facial expressions, how he represented, how he portrayed it. Did it make a difference to him? Did it impact him in some way? What did you think of that scene?
I mean, my take on it is the important thing to state is that the two scientists or people associated with the study who spoke to us, Natasha and Lawrence Perlman, who's the man you're referring to, they are very peripheral to the experiment. I mean, Lawrence only worked on it for about 9 or 10 months, and Natasha didn't work on it. She was just present while it was going on, and so sort of would hear things in the office. And so, you know, on one level, I'm really grateful to them, because without them kind of stepping forward and talking about this experiment, which has been shrouded in secrecy for years and years, we really wouldn't have half the information we have now about it. So, you know, I'm very grateful to them. In terms of how we came across, I think there is a sort of awkwardness with a lot of the people, because they know that this is a bit of an embarrassing experiment, and it's something that there's a lot of shame associated with it. And so I think people are quite awkward talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, he was an interesting man. I mean, it's worth mentioning that he had been trying to get access with another twin researcher who's a sort of twin academic. He had previously requested access to the study, and I think is fascinated by it from a kind of, you know, just from an academic perspective, that he feels it has some value to the scientific community and really is interested in what the results might be of this. So he sort of has a very kind of, I guess, clinical view of this, as did many of the other researchers and people who were involved in it. You know, I spoke to people who worked at the adoption agency who said that the psychiatrist there was also very clinical and kind of quite cold in some ways. So I think he does express some, you know, he does sort of say, is he morally compromised by it? And he feels he agreed on camera that he felt he was in some way. But as I said, I think they felt it really had some value to the scientific community and can really only see it in those terms.
I think that, you know, this particular point, I think, is, you know, as I've talked to my friends, especially in the neuroscience world, it came up again and again, not necessarily about him or that particular scene, but just, is there a point where ends ever justify the means when it comes to clinical study? I mean, if it is morally compromised, as you say, Becky, in any way, does it make it morally compromised in every way? Does this study have value, do you think? And that's just your opinion, but what do you think, Becky?
I certainly think that David, one of the brothers, felt that they should have access to it to find out for their own families what this might reveal about their backgrounds and their genetics, and whether that has a benefit to them personally, whether it should be released to the wider community. I mean, I've read a lot of this, and it contains a lot of very personal information about their families, and I don't think necessarily that I don't think I would want that for my own family, you know, having read it. But as I said, I think David and, you know, certainly St. Robert have a different feeling about that. Whether you should use research that has been gained in an unethical way is a bigger question for everybody.
The historical context is important. You know, I think that period in the 50s and 60s, kind of like the Wild West of psychology. And I studied psychology at university, and you know, there are these experiments like Milgram's obedience experiment, and later in 71 Stanford prison experiment, which by today's standards would be considered completely unethical. So I do think that we have to cut the researchers some slack, you know, because of the historical context. On the other hand, we know that they approached other adoption agencies for children to take part in this study and were told, no, this is completely unethical. You can't split identical siblings up. And this is, you know, right at the start of it. So I don't know. I change my mind about this all the time.
It's easy for us to say that as sort of filmmakers from the outside, you know, but obviously I think Robert and David and their family's experience is really very clear in that they feel this was, you know, damaging and unethical and, you know, really very misinformed, and that the lies that then went on after it to cover it up make it even worse. You know, Tim and I have a different perspective. You know, it didn't happen to us. How we would feel if it was us is potentially very different.
Yeah, no question. I can't imagine, you know, it's very hard to put yourself in that position, even to imagine it. But, you know, the remarkable part of the film, as you point out, the beginning of the film, these brothers find each other by chance. I mean, it does seem miraculous in a way. But now I hear there have been other sets of twins, also secretly separated at birth by Louise Wise, who have now been found as a result of seeing your film. That's pretty extraordinary. Tim, did you anticipate or think about that happening?
I mean, we always knew that there were other twins out there. We still don't know exactly how many or, you know, where they are. And it was pretty extraordinary. You know, a few months after the film was released, we got contacted by this lady saying, "I've just seen your film and I've taken the DNA test," knowing that I was adopted by the same agency around the same time. And this DNA test has matched me with someone in Calabasas in California. The lady who called us was from New Jersey. And I've just looked her up on Facebook and we look identical. And so, yeah, I filmed the meeting for the first time at the age of 54, these twins had been separated by the agency, and it was pretty extraordinary.
And it's worth mentioning that the Jewish Board of Family and Children Services did say that they didn't feel it was upon them to reach out to people and tell them about this, and that they would welcome any inquiries from anybody who did feel they might have been a part of this study. You know, and that's a whole other question, whether are they duty bound to inform these people. There have been multiple opportunities where this story has kind of nearly surfaced or partly surfaced over decades and decades, where there would have been opportunities for them to do that.
Yeah, I like you sort of alluded to, everyone probably has an opinion on this. Who am I to say? I haven't been through this, but it really does make you think. We had a lot of conversations within family and friends about that particular issue. In our last couple of minutes, let me ask you a very quick question, one that should be a short answer. Free will. Tim, you brought this up. Do we have it? Do we not?
I mean, it depends how you define free will, I think, Sanjay. I mean, I think that what I would say is that I was very shocked the time I spent with Natasha, the psychologist in the film, just how persuasive she was in arguing that, you know, free will as we see it is a bit of a fallacy, and that we are much more susceptible to our biological genetic impulses than we maybe believe. And that it's really disquieting for people. People don't like to hear that they don't have control over their own lives.
Yep, yep. Becky, do you is that your?
Oh gosh, good question. I mean, also, I don't know. I mean, I had arguments with people I was close to working on this. You know, that who didn't believe in free will, and you know, we always say there's no third thing. There's genes and environment, and that's it. You know, and that's a very uncomfortable position for lots of people, as Tim says, to occupy. You know, that we don't have a say in the decisions we make, and that they are. Those decisions are formed purely by, you know, our genes and how and where we've grown up.
I feel like as filmmakers, you are free will sort of examples, you know, I think for society. You know, I think we're better than ever at understanding the blueprint of who we are. We're better than ever at understanding our behavior and even predicting our behavior to a very, very granular detail. I mean, I think that's the essence of artificial intelligence. But still, and I say this, I think, as a humble neurosurgeon who's held the brain, that I feel like somewhere in all those crevasses and peaks and valleys are mysteries, real mysteries. And those mysteries hold our dreams and our hopes and dare I say, our free will. I think a life that has not been written, a life that has not been encoded in some way, is a real thing, a very real thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm just the eternal optimist, but I guess that's how I sort of look at it. But again,
certainly that's what, you know, Lawrence Wright in the film says. You know, we drift in the direction that our genes push us, but we aren't predestined to become a priest or a criminal or whatever. And that's his belief.
Congratulations again. What a wonderful film and a beautiful film. And then just so much conversation, wonderful conversation afterward. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta. Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey behind the scenes of CNN's award-winning film, three identical strangers.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.